In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, October 13th on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thursday at 3 is always industry chatter. And today my guest is Rick Bibin. He's the chief executive and president of Gibbs & Cox. And Rick, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Francis. My pleasure to be here.
Tell me about Gibbs & Cox and what you do and the clients that you serve in the federal government.
Sure. Gibbs & Cox has got a great history. We're about 82 years old. The company was originally formed in 1929, building ships and yachts. In the World War II time, we actually put out about 5,600 ships that we were the engineers and designers of. As we come into modern time frame, our major customers, the United States Navy. We support end products with the United States Navy. For example, for Lockheed Martin, we're the engineering design agent for the littoral combat ship, the Freedom Class, the odd number boats. We've been working on the DDG-51 and upgrades to the DDG-51 for over 20 years, which is the destroyer class that has been built in the 80s, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So our major customer is the United States Navy on the shipbuilding and engineering side of the strait. We've evolved over the last year or so and have increased a lot on the commercial and the platform sustainment side of the strait. We've actually had a very interesting year, different than a lot of our industry. We've actually doubled in size of our staff just over the last year, and it's been a very exciting time for bringing a lot of great talent, and our resource really is our people. So we're fortunate. We're a bunch of good, great engineering nerds and geeks.
What is driving that at a time where, whenever you talk about anything that has anything to do with the Pentagon, it's always budget shrinking, budget cuts, this and that and the other thing? What prompts a company whose primary customer is the Navy to be growing at that rate?
Well, we're in a really interesting niche, and we're probably the only company that I can think of that's really in our niche in terms of an independent yet trusted agent for the Navy as a naval architect and marine engineering company. I think certainly within the United States right now, we're the largest independent naval architecture and marine engineering company. And in terms of what we do for ship design, engineering analysis, and studies, we've just had a great run of the programs that we're associated with between the littoral combat ship, the DDG-51 program, mm-hmm. Aegis Ashore program that we support the Missile Defense Agency for. We've been very fortunate that our major programs have actually grown and blossomed over this time frame. We're not on the staff augmentation side, mm-hmm. so we don't do the services, government services business entirely, where we've got 50 or 100 folks sitting in a government seats and supporting the government. We're really just on the engineering and study side of the mm-hmm. street, and that marketplace has just done really well for us over the last year.
How has the situation with the budget at the Pentagon affected your business otherwise, other than driving this growth? That seems to be a separate issue.
Sure. One of the things that forced us to do was over the last year plus is look at different marketplaces. So we've focused heavily on the commercial marketplace. One of the things taking place, as you said, with the decrease in federal budgets, particularly in shipbuilding, we've looked a lot at the sustainment marketplace. So not only the U.S. Navy, but shipbuilding companies and foreign navies are looking at their ships and saying, I can't afford to build a lot of new ships. I need to extend the life cycle. I need to sustain my current ships for another 15, 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. They come back to us as engineering agents and ask us to support the design, look at what kind of upgrades might take place, diesel engine swap outs, propulsion system swap outs, energy swap outs, that we can support them in doing. On the commercial side, one of the things we did back in February, we opened up an office in New Orleans to take advantage of what we saw as a terrific labor marketplace because of some of the downturns in the shipbuilding industry there. And we've used that as a catapult for us to really build up in the commercial shipyard business. So we're out right now supporting about 8 or 9 individual commercial shipyards, supporting the design for dredges and tugboats, as well as supporting those shipyards with naval programs
You talked about some of the upgrade work that you're doing both for the United States Navy and for navies around the world. What's the bulk of that? What are either our Navy or other navies asking you to do for them to help them extend the life cycle of ships they already own?
Well, I've got with me our chief engineer, Tom Schubert. So I'm going to ask Tom, he's our engineer, to help out with that answer.
We'll get him on a microphone here in a little bit and come back to that. Talk about the kind of life cycle concepts, though, that the Navy is looking at now compared to maybe 10 years ago, where that didn't seem to be as big a deal, especially in any kind of Pentagon procurement,
sure,
where nowadays that's something that's, I imagine, is top of mind for everything they're doing.
Well, one of the things that we've seen a lot of is we've seen a lot of, we'll call it, moving to the right of shipbuilding programs.
Mm-hmm.
So programs that the Navy had planned on 10-plus years back in terms of growth, such as the CGX program, the Advanced Cruiser program, the years back, the Arsenal ship program, the DDG-1000 program for another destroyer class, have either slowed down or the trade-offs have decided to kill programs.
Mm-hmm.
So the change in the cycle of construction has really impacted the future of the Navy in terms of the kind of platforms that we're looking at. The decision back in the December timeframe by the government to go with two vendors, Austal as well as Lockheed Martin, for the littoral combat ship helps accelerate getting platforms out to meet targets and asymmetric threats.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing, bad thing, or just is?
I think it is.
Just how it is today.
It takes a long time for a ship acquisition cycle to take place. The front end planning, the designs, the decision making, the advanced acquisitions for buying materials, and all takes a really long time. So once you stop that system,
mm-hmm,
it has huge impacts.
How has technology changed that time frame? I imagine when technology was not as woven into the fabric of even a ship procurement as it is now, it wasn't as big a deal. But when you're talking about, as we talked before we went on the air, mm-hmm, you know, some of these procurements are 10, 15, 20 years, in some cases longer. And obviously technology changes now at about a 12 to 18 month cycle. How does that affect the job that you all have to do to help design that ship from the front end?
That's a great question. And one of the things that we work hard on is with our IRAD, Internal Research and Development money, is to keep our naval architects and engineers focused on what new technology advancements are, so that when our customers come to us for ideas in terms, again, of propulsion systems, concerns about endurance, the ability for a ship to go further miles, those kind of advancements are things that they come to us a lot on. They come to us talking about composites. One of the approaches that's a new approach which the littoral combat ship brings to the table is the modularity, the idea of being able to swap out different modules, so that a platform can meet different threats. At the same time, the energy side of the street is a key element that the Navy is spending a lot of interest with us in terms of hybrid energy drives, electric drives, green technology, open architecture kind of approaches to the whole platform. And
mm-hmm,
and these have, it's an interesting thing, these advancements help a lot to bring new capabilities to the system, but they don't necessarily accelerate the production of a platform.
Mm-hmm.
One quick side anecdote, back in the World War II time frame when we were doing the Liberty ships, when we started off doing the Liberty ships, it took 146 days to produce a ship. By the time we were in mode, we had those ships down to 46 days to produce a ship. It generally takes us about 4 years, 3.5 to 4 years to produce a ship now.
Mm-hmm. When we come back, I want to bring your colleague in, and we'll talk more about life cycle and planning and anticipating that, and what both our Navy and other navies are doing to do that. But there's a lot I want to dig into in some
Great.
Of the things that you've talked about. So we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. My guest is Rick Bibin, the chief executive and president of the marine engineer and design firm Gibbs & Cox, on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Federal Broadband Minute, provided by Hughes.
Can your network save your agency money and still deliver bandwidth-efficient service? The answer is yes, and the savings are at the field office. Here's how. Don't pay for high-cost dedicated access lines and MPLS ports for field office connectivity. Instead, call Hughes and get an affordable managed broadband service. The benefits are huge. By replacing costly special access with affordable broadband, Hughes can save your agency up to $300 per month per site. Multiply that by all your field offices and see the savings take off. Or maybe you think your network should provide better service for the cost of what you already pay. Whether it's more savings or better quality, Hughes National Managed Broadband Service is the answer. And get a path-diverse backup solution for the same price as your primary network alone. Enable your government field office of the future from Hughes.
Visit government.hughes.com/WFED.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Geospatial Intelligence Agency has just moved into a state-of-the-art headquarters facility that it says will let it do a much better job of meeting its intelligence mission. NGA's new campus marks the first time the agency's had a facility that's purpose-built for what it does. Officials say consolidating their IT infrastructure in one place will let them move data around much more quickly. The building in Springfield, Virginia, is the third largest federal facility in the D.C. area.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Hey, Angie. Wow, you did it, didn't you? You went over to...
Went to Walmart and got the Pioneer DEH44 HD with built-in HD radio technology.
New HD2, HD3 channels, digital sound quality, and no subscription fees.
You got it. Hey, come on, let's ride. Since the Pioneer DEH44 HD is only $120 at Walmart, I'm taking you out for dinner.
Nice.
HD radio. More radio, more value. Now in the car audio department at Walmart.
Retirement is expensive. Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. Join me for an informative dinner seminar on October the 18th at Mrs. K's Toll House Restaurant in Silver Spring. We'll talk about ways to help you disaster-proof your retirement. Call 1-800-783-1564 to make a reservation. Seating is limited, so call now, 1-800-783-1564. And join me on Saturday mornings at 10:30 for how to protect and grow your money on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. Your agency has to strike a balance between information security and information sharing. And the White House wants to help. And an update on how the civilian BRAC process will help the government shed that excess property. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is Rick Vibin, the chief executive and president of Gibbs & Cox. And I get an extra today, don't I?
Super.
Not only you, but I also have Tom Schubert, who is the chief engineering officer for Gibbs & Cox here. And Rick tried to bring you on just a couple of minutes ago when we were talking about life cycle costs and what not only our Navy, but navies around the world are asking you and your company about extending the life cycle of ships that they already have in inventory. What are you seeing our Navy and other navies asking you about when it comes to that?
Well, typically the types of studies that we perform for clients either domestically or internationally involve bringing new capabilities to existing ships that are in their fleets or replacing obsolete technology with something new, or just basic, I've got stuff that doesn't work and I need to replace it. So that's really about as simple as it gets.
What is there a breakdown between the I've got stuff that doesn't work and I'm trying to evolve my fleet into something more technologically advanced?
Off the top of my head, I'd say the most of the U.S. work is new capability that we're bringing forward with some on the sustainment side. in the international foreign military sales market. We do a lot more just keeping things running and extending their lives.
Mm-hmm. As far as new capabilities, what kinds of things are there? Is it technological? Is it just capacity, capability? What kinds of things?
It ranges from the simple of how can I operate my ship farther without having to get gas, so mm-hmm. to speak, to how do I engage new threats with advanced weapons and sensors mm-hmm. that are just coming off the development line.
Rick, Tom's go ahead, sorry.
And in many cases, that involves doing it with less people.
Mm-hmm.
So decreased staffing on these platforms requires systems that somebody can operate quicker and be cross-trained to be able to operate a lot more kinds of equipment. So decreased staffing and decreased manning has also been, in the U.S. platforms in particular, a significant driver.
Tom mentioned energy, and I've had any number of guests from both inside and outside the Pentagon talking about their efforts to try to reduce overall the amount of energy that they're using. What are the trends that you're seeing in the ways that they either want to go or are just going because of what's available when it comes to energy?
Well, let me think. You start off, Tom. You were at the energy meeting this morning.
I was. I had the good fortune to be at the NDIA Naval Energy Forum this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Heard some great discussion from CNO and Secretary Mabus as well on his five initiatives for the Navy's energy program,
mm-hmm.
Which they're working at great strides towards achieving those. The some of it's simple things, hull coatings and just changing the way ships are operated. Others range to the more complex, adding electric propulsion to the LHD-8, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Just a wide variety of easy things, really hard things, and a lot of things in the middle.
What is it? Money that you think has driven the emphasis on green technology in ship, not just shipbuilding, but all across the Pentagon, or what's driving that? Do you think?
I think some of it's economics. Clearly, there are reasons for wanting to reduce your dependence on fossil fuel in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Tactically, strategically, it's just the correct answer for the Navy. Improving efficiency overall and being judicious stewards of our resources is at the top of everyone's list.
Mm-hmm. Rick, is there a fit with what we talked about in the first segment about for a long time there not being a focus on life cycle costs? And this drive toward more sustainable, more energy efficient ships, and it goes all across all the branches of the military?
Absolutely, Francis. A quick example, and Tom gave you a soundbite, and I just want to reiterate when Tom said hull coatings.
Mm-hmm.
Hull coatings, think paint. We're used to thinking paint. Well, it's a little slab of paint, doesn't weigh a thing. The amount of paint on a ship is a huge number. So we're finding now, well, maybe we don't need to paint the ship. And what are we doing? Well, are we in fact hurting the life cycle because we're allowing for rust and corrosion to take place sooner? So we look at other composites and materials that don't necessarily need that same hull coating. So it has impacts across the whole range. So we'll use modeling, CFD, we'll use computational fluid dynamics modeling to make sure that things that we might do to the platform will help speed the platform, not slow it down. So the whole life cycle gamut is they all tie together. Answer, short answer, yes.
This is fascinating to me because for a long time it seemed like the attitude toward energy efficiency and that kind of thing is it's more expensive to set ourselves up front than the amount of money that we'll save long term. And that dynamic seems to have really changed, I'd say, most dramatically over the last, what, maybe 3 to 5 years, where agencies, in particular the Pentagon, have figured out we're going to have to invest up front, but it doesn't take nearly as long as we thought or nearly as long as it used to realize a return on investment. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and again, we spend a lot of time and effort on concepts to look at these kind of things. One example of a simple study that we were involved with was the laundry water issue over the last year or so, mm-hmm. where the Navy said, okay, maybe we need to look at changing the schedule when we're doing certain function like laundry. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we change the time of day that we do these things, we'll have better efficiency. We can use different kinds of waters, different kind of process. Same thing with power. Are there different ways of using lighting and all that will allow for greater overall efficiency of the platform? So we do a number of those kinds of studies.
When we come back, I want to ask you about that kind of engineering thing. Maybe take it another step forward, which is do you literally walk around a ship and say, how could we do that different while you're pointing at the things? Because it mm-hmm. seems to, from my brain, that might be how you do it. Let's talk about that a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Rick Bibin, the Chief Executive and President, and Tom Schubert, Chief Engineering Officer of Gibbs & Cox, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Feds will pay an average of 3.8% more in health premiums next year, far less than the 7.2% average they faced this year. Part of the reason for the lower 2012 increase is the Office of Personnel Management's focus on generic drugs. OPM is also putting more emphasis on preventive and wellness programs. An increase in younger enrollees may also have helped lower costs. I'm Amy Morris.
These are hard times for federal employees. A multi-year pay freeze, rumors of furloughs, and discussions on reducing benefits are the realities that all federal employees face. Now more than ever, it's important to find ways to save your hard-earned money. One way is with life insurance from WEPA. WEPA offers lower rates and a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. To learn how much you can save, visit waepa.org. Once again, that's waepa.org.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
We live in uncertain times. More than ever, federal agencies rely on TASC to accomplish the most important missions and protect America's way of life. Few in the world can do what the experts at TASC do. Trusted partners, honest counselors, TASC's highly specialized problem solvers use rare knowledge and deep experience to provide advanced systems engineering, integration, and decision support services that the U.S. government depends on to keep the country safe and secure. TASC, working for you and the nation. TASC.com.
5 ways to fight diabetes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus. With HHS HealthBeat, people can lower their risk of diabetes by doing 5 things. At the National Institutes of Health, researcher Jared Reese saw that in data on more than 200,000 people. He looked at following a healthy diet, having a healthy weight, being physically active, limiting drinking, and not smoking. He says those 5 activities paid off.
Each healthy lifestyle factor was associated with about a 30% lower risk of developing diabetes, and all 5 healthy lifestyle factors combined was associated with about an 80% lower risk.
He says being overweight or obese carried the worst risk, but he says it could be somewhat offset by sticking with the other healthy activities. The study was in Annals of Internal Medicine. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Join senior government leaders from CMS, NIH, HHS, VA, and MHS at AFSEA Bethesda's 4th Health IT Day, November 2nd at the Mayflower Renaissance Hotel in D.C. Discussions will include managing security for a mobile point of care, joint electronic health records, federal health regulations and procurements, and big data management. AFSEA Bethesda thanks premier sponsors Accenture, Booz Allen Hamilton, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, SAS, and Vangent. Register at afseabethesda.org/healthitday.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter guests today, Rick Biven and Tom Schubert of Gibbs & Cox. And before we went to break, we were talking about some of the engineering work that you're doing on ships and the ways that you're rethinking the ways that people do whatever it is that they have to do, right down to things, as you mentioned, doing laundry and using light and so on. How do you think of that stuff? As I'm trying to noodle through that process, I'm just imagining a clipboard. This is how I'd have to do it. It's just with a clipboard walking around and going, huh, and pointing out various things and writing them down. It's got to be a more sophisticated process than that.
What's your story, Tom?
I'd like to say that it is, but oftentimes it's really that simple. It's either our folks walking around with a clipboard and taking some notes, or some of our Navy partners and clients walking around saying, hey, I wonder if there's a better way to do this. Mm-hmm. We should have somebody go look at that. Mm-hmm. And we'll get a phone call and you know, off we go.
How do you decide? This might be just kind of a simple on the way to simpleton question, but how do you decide whether something is even potentially offers enough savings to even look at something like that? Is there some kind of a dividing line, or do you just kind of pursue all of these until they you get an answer one way or the other?
We certainly can't pursue everything just from a time and resources standpoint. Mm-hmm. But usually with some early investigation and you know, a couple hours of thought from a couple folks, you can sort of sniff out things that have some promise or maybe don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, spend a little bit more time and confirm either that there's benefit to be had or that the returns are more marginal and just kind of proceed in a measured fashion like that.
Have there been any that you thought would when you first heard about it, you thought, well, that's kind of silly. There's not much there. And then you did some research and found out there was really something to it?
Well, certainly one that we were supporting the Navy on early on was the LHD-8's hybrid electric propulsion plant. And that's an example where at first blush, it seemed like a good idea that would help them save a little bit of fuel. And the savings that they've been able to achieve now that the ship's been underway, I think almost $2 million, if my numbers are right, on their first cruise from Pascagoula around South America to San Diego. Mm-hmm. Just huge numbers, far more than were ever anticipated.
Tell me more about that. Tell me a little more detail.
Sure. Well, LHD-8 is a follow-on to the large amphibious ships from the earlier WASP class. With LHD-8, they brought gas turbine propulsion to the amphibious Navy as opposed to steam plants mm-hmm. that they had prior. And what they were looking to do was find a way to operate at low speed without having to run the big gas turbine engines that were notoriously fuel inefficient at low speed.
Mm-hmm.
They realized that they had excess electric power generation capacity on the ship. So we helped them figure out a way to add an electric motor to the shaft that allows them to operate on electric propulsion up to about 12 knots, mm-hmm. which is where that ship spends an awful lot of its time. So their fuel savings was tremendous.
Rick, you mentioned during the break that you are the first leader of this company that's not an engineer. How do you take the great engineering ideas that Tom and his team come up with and turn them into a business case for the Pentagon or turn them into a business case for your company to make to the DOD?
For me, that's the fun part. Because we've got this, as I said, great team of engineers. So the first thing I had to do really when I came on board the company was to understand what we've done, what we're doing, and what we're capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at our marketplace and pretty much putting together a business case and saying, all right, there's a marketplace that we should be able to successfully penetrate and attack and support. Tom gave the example before of the question you had before in terms of how do we do these studies, and all studies are what we do. So we pretty much have looked at the marketplace and are going after right now, particularly on the government services side, we're going after more of the engineering kind of discipline that historically the company hasn't been going after. We've been historically based on doing development platforms, and as the new development platforms are further and further apart, the peaks that we've counted on become further and further apart.
Mm-hmm.
So we've expanded our business model in the government services, in the class services, in the lifecycle extension, in the commercial business to decrease the valleys. I can't accelerate the peaks, but
right.
I can decrease the valleys.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, on the commercial side, this year probably, maybe 1% of our business will be in the commercial sector. Next year we're projecting more like 15 to 20%, and we already have it pretty well lined up with our partners that we're working with in the commercial shipyard. So, again, I looked at what we're doing and went out and really, with our team, went out into the marketplace and just sold on what we're capable of doing.
Mm-hmm. What's changed over the past maybe 10 to 15 years about doing business with the government, either especially when it comes to the business side, not so much mm-hmm. the technology and the demands and all that kind of thing?
Well, I've been with a lot of my competitors in the industry in previous lives, and so I think I have a pretty good feel of what the marketplace is like, particularly on the engineering and previously in the IT side of the street. So things I'd say that have changed have been how procurements are coming out. On the Navy side of the street, the Seaport E-contract certainly changed a lot of dynamics and relationships. Right now we're seeing the change from five-year procurements to three-year procurements. That'll have a lot of impact on industry and actually on government
mm-hmm.
in terms of their acquisition process and the amount of time that they're going to need in terms of repeatedly putting out new acquisitions. For industry, it's going to impact the kinds of investments that we make for the short term and for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
The small business unrestricted, the different size structures of companies, I'm surprised that actually hasn't changed. I'm really surprised that the small business metric at 27 million or whatever hasn't gone up to the 50 million, which had been talked about for years. But we'll see what happens. I think how things change over the next couple of years will be really telling for our industry.
Do you have any thoughts about what you anticipate seeing?
Seeing in terms of the procurement types or seeing in terms of the marketplace?
Either one, the structure of the landscape of the defense community or any of that.
Well, I can tell you what we plan on doing. How about if I answer the question
sure.
that way? What we plan on doing is we've made a number of strategic hires to help evolve our company. And are going much more aggressively after prime contracts within the naval environment.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, we've been, God, it'd be great to have Gibbs and Cox. We need them to do a study. They do great studies. We bring great credibility. Now, in order to be successful to go to the next tier, we really need to go after more contracts as prime contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're investing a lot of time and a lot of resources. And between Tom and myself and a number of other folks, that's really the future that we're looking forward to.
What will your company look like in, say, 3 years based on that desire? How will it look different than it looks today?
I actually have charts on that.
You know, charts don't work on the radio so well.
Okay, if you can picture red, blue, and yellow, I can show you the lines. Well, we're predicting over the next – I just did a five-year forward-looking, and we're predicting 3 years. Okay, we're predicting in 3 years that our DOD or end customer federal government national security content, which is right now about 93%, In the next 3 to 5 years, we're predicting that to being closer to 60 to 65%, with the balance breakout really being between commercial and other kinds of naval programs, which are still federal, but not on the development side. We're involved with a number of Coast Guard programs, a number mm-hmm. of NOAA programs. We're involved with a number of pursuits for platform programs overseas in 7-8 different countries right now.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that other agencies do procurement-wise that would be helpful to the Pentagon or vice versa? Are there some best practices that maybe one agency could take from another?
I'm sure there are. Offhand, I can't think of any. Over the last X years, I've really been so naval-focused.
Mm-hmm.
The big challenge that we actually deal with is the challenge of cost versus price. The government will put out a procurement, and frequently it'll have X number of hours to bid on. Well, that creates a basis or a normalization factor for an award, but it doesn't really deal with a metric of how much is it really going to cost to get a job done. So mm-hmm. The price-cost factor is a really tough thing. I don't know how to fix it, how to work it, but we spend a lot of time within ourselves figuring, how can we demonstrate the savings? And that's really a tough thing.
My guests are Rick Biben and Tom Schubert of Gibbs & Cox on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Take a break and continue our conversation in just a moment.
AT&T's commitment is clear. That's why we're announcing that with the planned merger with T-Mobile, AT&T will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We will invest $8 billion more and deploy the next generation of wireless broadband to nearly everyone in America. This investment will create as many as 96,000 American jobs. We're ready to invest in America. AT&T.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Computers are a wonderful tool, but every day children are sexually solicited online. Protect your kids online. Visit cybertipline.com. Help delete online predators.
Hi, I'm Congressman Jerry Connolly. I want your children to be safe online. Talk with your kids about online safety. Know who is communicating with your child.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
The 12th Annual Excellence in Partnership Awards is October 26th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. The Excellence in Partnership Awards honor those who have excelled at promoting partnership in government procurement. A special tribute to Mythbusters for those who embody effective communication between government and industry. Come celebrate at this special event for the government contracting community and the Multiple Award Schedules program. Register now for the Excellence in Partnership Awards at eipawards.com.
Five Ways to Fight Diabetes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, people can lower their risk of diabetes by doing five things. At the National Institutes of Health, researcher Jared Reese saw that in data on more than 200,000 people. He looked at following a healthy diet, having a healthy weight, being physically active, limiting drinking, and not smoking. He says those five activities paid off.
Each healthy lifestyle factor was associated with about a 30% lower risk of developing diabetes, and all five healthy lifestyle factors combined was associated with about an 80% lower risk.
He says being overweight or obese carried the worst risk, but he says it could be somewhat offset by sticking with the other healthy activities. The study was in Annals of Internal Medicine. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Rick Biben and Tom Schubert. They are the Chief Executive and President and Chief Engineering Officer, respectively, of Gibbs & Cox, and they're my guests on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Rick, during the break, we were having a conversation about cost versus value and that kind of thing. What are you seeing? Are you seeing a better reception to value as opposed to price at the Pentagon now?
it swings. Mm-hmm. I mean, over the last, you asked the question before, about 10 years, and the oscillation of when we see value actually being paid attention to versus lowest price.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps there's some procurements that really should be lowest price, but the more you're worrying about engineering, the less you should be worrying about lowest price. You should be worrying about what's really going to get me what I want.
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about in the break, we consider it important that we invest a lot of our money into IRAD. Very few companies in our marketplace invest anywhere near the amount of money that we do in our IRAD. We have a portfolio of ship concepts that we've come up with. We brief to the Navy. The Navy will come back and ask us, hey, would you look at this in addition? So we'll do those studies, and that's part of our way of getting our young engineers and naval architects on game, creating really an opportunity for a mentor protege. We've got a great team of senior engineers and naval architects that have been around since forever.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that our Navy customers and partners such as Lockheed and some of the shipyards that we work with worry about is what are we doing to really get that understanding, that experience down to the younger folks. We use our IRAD as part of that exchange and part of the mentor-protege program.
Where do you go and find talent these days?
Well, for example, as I said, we've doubled the staff this past year. We stay very actively involved with a number of the universities that have students graduating in our disciplines. And those predominant disciplines, the schools would be University of Michigan, Virginia Tech, where Tom is a Hokie fan from, University of New Orleans, Kings Point, who am I forgetting, Webb, a couple of other schools like that really have the engineers and the marine architects and naval architects in that discipline field. As we've tried to hire over this last time, one of the areas we've been very successful is also working with the teachers and the guidance counselors in the schools, who look at what we're doing on the development side and say, wow, what a great opportunity for our students to go from book learning. What a great way for them to start off their career.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, folks that are in their 40s or 50s will look forward and say, wow, they're doing this new platform development and this new platform development. They're doing Aegis Ashore and some of these other really sizzly programs. When's the next time I might have an opportunity to work on those programs, just perhaps versus doing augmentation stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Those drivers were great assets in helping us do this significant ramp up that we did over the past year.
Do you have more people to fill slots, or do you have more slots than you have people?
We had no problems finding greatly qualified people. Again, we opened the office in New Orleans to really look at the Avondale folks that became available, and quickly we were able to hire the head of IRAD for Avondale, and
mm-hmm.
he brought a couple of his folks over with. So when people understand what we do, we have not a lot of difficulty. We're, I don't know, 10 to 1, at least 10. For every opening that we're looking for, we're seeing at least 10 resumes for.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause there are some companies in some disciplines that are saying, I've got more spaces than I have people who are able to fill those spaces. So that's encouraging to hear that that the pipeline is full for your company. People that do what you do. Rick Bivens, my guest. He's the chief executive and president of Gibbs & Cox. Tom Schubert is the chief engineering officer for the company, and we'll wrap up our conversation on industry chatter in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To the Marines who watch over the skies, it says the enemy can't see you. To the Marines who carry out their mission on the ground, it says I have your back. To adversaries, it says don't even think about it. It is the F-35B, the fifth generation multi-role fighter jet that combines short takeoff and vertical landing capability with supersonic speed and radar evading stealth. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go. Wherever the mission takes them, our Marines know it will be there. It's the F-35B. A fighter jet that can take off and land virtually anywhere, from the most remote, austere airfields and roads to modern ships. That means it can be based close to frontline combat, shrinking the distance between base and target. For the Marines and for our nation, that's a game-changing advantage. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go.
Retirement is expensive. Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. Join me for an informative dinner seminar on October the 18th at Mrs. K's Toll House Restaurant in Silver Spring. We'll talk about ways to help you disaster-proof your retirement. Call 1-800-783-1564 to make a reservation. Seating is limited, so call now, 1-800-783-1564. And join me on Saturday mornings at 10:30 for how to protect and grow your money on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
They gave a part of themselves, sacrificed for our freedom. The brave men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces wounded in action overseas. Now it's our turn to give as they return home. So join the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing much-needed direct programs for injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Human Capital Management Federal is a highly anticipated training conference with over 300 delegates and key speakers, such as John Barry, Director of the Office of Personnel Management, John Sepulveda, Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Administration at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer for the Department of Energy. The event is November 14th through 16th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit hcmfederal.com for more info and to register now. Mention code FNRHCMF to receive a 10% discount.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Gibbs and Cox, my focus on industry chatter today. The chief executive and president, Rick Biben, and Tom Schubert, the chief engineering officer, are in studio with me. Rick, you mentioned that over the next couple years your focus is going to increase in the commercial sector while you kind of keep the focus that you have on your government customers. Is there something about your company's experience in the government market that you think will give you maybe an edge in the commercial market?
Sure. I'll tell a quick anecdote here. Back in the February timeframe of last year, there was an accident that took place at a shipyard down in the southeast. And the U.S. had transferred a ship, an old Fig 8, to the Pakistani Navy. And Pakistani Navy accidentally drove her into a pier.
Whoops.
A boo-boo. And as a result of some relationships that we had with this the U.S. shipyard down in the Jacksonville area, BAE, another contractor, VSE, we were able to work out an arrangement that we were brought in. And over a weekend, we designed what's called a cofferdam to help lift the ship up so she didn't have to be dry docked and help repair the ship. And within less than a month, the ship was on its way back to Pakistan. BAE and VSE and other companies heard about what we did, and all of a sudden we started to get calls about, well, can you do this for us and that for us? One of the things that we targeted before this year was really to go after the commercial marketplace. So as we entered this year, we built some very aggressive rates to go after commercial marketplace. The first job that we did for BAE in their shipyard was followed by another job doing what's called a bull bow on the front of a ship, followed by another job which we won together to design a hopper dredge. And all of a sudden, we're now up to, 8, 9, 10 jobs with BAE. We have about 5 different jobs with another shipyard called Halter, a couple different jobs with another shipyard called Bollinger, and word's getting around that Gibbs has come in and not only come in with the engineering that we always knew they had, but opened the office in New Orleans and are going after the commercial marketplace. We understand the naval vessel regulations, the NVRs, and the ABS regulations, the shipbuilder regulations, and we're just able to really turn fast and deliver quick products that work. We've always had that reputation, but we've gotten the price in the right model now, and we've let the ship industry know that we're going to go after it, and we're working it.
I mentioned right when we went on the air, I looked at your bio before you came on, And you've been in this business for a long time, in this market for a long time. What's changed the most throughout your career, do you think, about dealing with the federal government?
Dealing with the federal government. All right, I'm going to answer two parts.
Okay.
First of all, what's changed most in my career, which would be seriously computers, and what we're using computers for.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. When I think back to my first computer that I worked with at the Department of Energy, a little box that you had to shake to get the amber or orange light to flicker, or you
had
a trash 80.
I sold those. Don't call them that.
Well, TRS 80, whatever you're going to call it, Radio Shack TRS 80. And you think about what you were using them for 30 years ago, and then you think, what do we not use computers for?
Right.
It's a fascinating thing. It really is. The increase in technology that's allowed us are amazing. In DOD procurements, we've seen the bundling of contracts, the debundling of contracts, the mega contracts like the C-40s. We've seen the GSA schedules, which for a while were, if you didn't have one, you were dead. So we've seen the ins and outs, and I think we'll continue to see the ins and outs of different kind of contracting.
If we gave prizes, I would give you a box of 8-inch floppy disks to use on your Model 1. I appreciate you being here today. It's great to talk to you. Tom, you too. Thank you for coming in today and talking about the work that you're doing. My guests, Rick Bibin, the Chief Executive and President, and Tom Schubert, the Chief Engineering Officer for Gibbs & Cox. This conversation will be posted on federalnewsradio.com on the in-depth page later this afternoon, and you can hear it there anytime you want. Hour number two of the program right around the corner, and my guest when we come back, the Inspector General at the Department of Transportation, Calvin Scovel, talking about his look at the next-gen system at the Federal Aviation Administration when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.